Very interesting.
We are very interesting people. Hey guys, thanks for joining the Green Room Interviews. My name is Devin Sheffield. I've got the MC and the feature this week here with me.
Yeah, we are.
I got Mikey Pullman and Chad Hift.
Hello, Chad.
So we've got, I've also got Sean Peabody sitting in. Guys, so we're going to talk about, well, first off, how did the show go this week, guys?
It's good. It's a good week. Very strong week. A lot of fun.
Muy bueno.
What do you think of the headliner?
She's pretty cool, yo.
Do you have any good advice for either of you?
Yeah, she told me not to do this podcast, but you know what? I guess there was a couple of good talks, mostly, you know, goofing on shit and stuff like that.
Right on, right on. So, guys, in the month of July, we've got the, was it, Boise's Funniest Person Contest?
Yeah.
And, Mikey, where do we, can we find that online?
Boise'sFunniestPerson.com, actually.
Oh, well, that makes it fairly easy.
We also have a Facebook page and a Twitter account.
Cool.
Boise's Funniest Person, no hyphen.
No hyphen.
No underscore.
What's the premise for, so that you get a mentor? So, you all three of you are going to be mentors in the comedy competition?
Alright, I don't have, like, all the details, but essentially, in July, non-comedians will have a chance to perform in Boise, Idaho for a chance to win $1,000 over the month of July. We'll be holding tryouts in June. There's two different tryouts, a Wednesday and, I believe, a weekend. And we will start off with 20 contestants. It'll go down to 10. That's where comics like the three of us will be chosen as mentors for these 10. They will perform over the next 3 weeks, and at the last week of July, we'll crown a winner. That winner will win $1,000.
Oh, that's really cool. What as a mentor, have you guys thought about what you're going to say to these kids, or how you're going to go about?
I just totally plan on killing the other 9 contestants. My fault, man. That's what I'm trying to do. All right, that's plan B. Yeah, you know, it just depends on the person you get, man. Really, I mean, you might get somebody who's, you know, I don't know, maybe done theater in school or I tell jokes in this manner. No, but then again, you might have someone who doesn't have any kind of experience, but they've had a whole bunch of funny stuff happen in their life. And so you're like, okay, well, we're going to take your stories, and we're going to make them concise and add punchlines, because that'll make it easier for them. I mean, it really just depends on the person you get. I mean, you might get a deaf dude, you know, that's deaf, dumb, and blind dude that can only play pinball. you know, you never know what you're going to have to learn. You never know what you can...
Pinball wizard, is that what you're hoping for?
Like, shit, I drew the pinball wizard.
I'd be pretty excited, actually.
Hey, man, if Helen Keller can learn to talk and read and shit, this guy should be able to.
At least tell a joke.
Look, okay, so you can just do, like, Mr. Bean kind of material. That's fine, you know?
Oh, that's funny. Mikey, what about you? Have you thought about anything you're going to come straight out with the comics? Like, he said he was going to be, like, talking about their stories, funny stories they have.
Or killing
Everybody's
them.
Everybody's different. I mean, some people are... It's going to depend a lot on the person. Like, if they want help more than others, or, like, some people... Like, when you meet new comics already in the industry, some people are more, like, susceptible to help. Some people want help, and some people kind of just want to do their own thing. So as a mentor, I think it'll just be, like, meeting with your person, see what they need, see what they want, and then just try to be as beneficial as you can. And I'm just hoping to get somebody funny, so I don't have to work very hard.
What if you get Dice Clay?
I'll win. That's not a problem. It's only amateurs, though. Like, professional, like, anybody who's ever, like, worked.
Like I said, what if you get Dice Clay?
You'd probably lose anyway.
You know what's funnier is discussing what your biggest fear is. You know, like, what if you get the guys, like, who's your favorite comic? He's like, Larry the Cable Guy. Love that guy. Okay, what's your next favorite? Jeff Foxworthy. I'm like, dude.
That'd be cool. At least they know comics.
Dude, I would just kill him.
What's your third? Dane Cook.
They just keep getting worse. So I'm just, and if that happens, what I'm going to do is kill that guy and get a doppelganger.
A lot of murder. And,
you know what? I have a lot of free time.
Sounds like a game of Clue.
Chad Heft in the basement.
That's always Chad Heft. I guess Chad Heft again with another comic.
Yeah, he's killing dudes to win.
That's my hook. You know how it is. You know.
What if you get a kid that's too funny? Like, oh, God, he's funnier than I am.
No, I would be fine with that. Then you have to do less work. That's beautiful. It's like, hey, just go earn that $500 for me, man.
Don King of Boise Comedy.
Picking winners.
Cage match.
So, Sean, you obviously know a lot about teaching and imparting evidence to other comics because you do the True Grinders on Tuesday, and you sit down with the comics every week and chat up about the industry. I bet you have a ton of really good advice for new comics.
Well, I mean, especially with this scene, because what I noticed with the Boise comedy scene is like we've got a comic in there now. His name is Eric Lyons. And this cat's been in the business 3 weeks. And as far as 3 weeks goes, I mean, this guy's already won. He's won one competition, and then he came in second for the last one he did. And he's only had the microphone for 3 weeks in his hand, like maybe six shows total. So
I'm opening that guy.
With the guys that are coming in, is what I'm saying is that I'm kind of excited to find out who can do what, because from what I've seen just from going to the open mics, is that these guys are popping up out of nowhere. But they're not just coming as like, I'm a newbie. They're coming in like, boom, I'm really doing this. And they're actually having people who've been here for like, who's been new to the scene like maybe 3 months or 4 months, are looking at these new guys on the scene going, holy shit, like these guys, like, wow, where do they come from? Like, this guy just popped up out of nowhere.
They're bringing it.
So yeah, and I'm thinking it's going to be the same way. I'm kind of excited to see who's going to pop up on this competition thing. And I hope if they're already good like that guy is, like Eric Lyons, like that dude, like he rocked that both times.
Is he eligible?
I think he is because he's under 3 months.
Holy crap.
Amazing. Jesse Stoller just won the comedy competition at the Crux on Friday night.
And Eric Lyons came in second.
Did he? Yeah. Jesse's set was really good. Like I felt like he did an awesome job.
But you're going from how long has Jesse Stoller been in it?
Right.
What,
six months,
7 months, and this guy's been in it 3 weeks, and he's got him on his, and he's already up on him. Like, dude, yeah, if you would have just messed up two jokes, I'd have won that.
Right.
And I've been here 3 weeks. You've been here 6 months.
So yeah, these new kids are coming out of the woodwork, clearly.
That's what I'm saying, is I think that's what this competition is going to do. It's going to bring out certain people where nobody's... You might find that, you know, the nine people in here or the 10 people that are going to be to where, you know, maybe that's what they were supposed to do. Maybe they're supposed to be a stand-up comedian or something because they just came in here and just dominated. Where people were like, wow, like, that really just happened? I don't know. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's going to be really exciting. I think it'll be beneficial for... The whole scene should be awesome because, you know, with new comics come new fans, bringing more people to the club and the open mic is always really important. Sean, you're always talking about working clean. When you talk about the importance of working clean,
you're not going to be edited. That's the main thing. This is what I think. And this is my opinion. I know a lot of people have a problem with the way I think about working clean, but. I think, in my opinion, every professional, anybody who calls himself a professional comedian should have at least 15 minutes of clean material. There should never be a time where a comedian has to say, I can't do my set here. That's not what a professional would do. A professional would be able to go whatever, however, wherever, it doesn't matter. That's what a professional comic would do. So I think that, you know, having 15 minutes clean, I mean, and I'm not saying that you got to go and erase everything that you do as a comedian. Like, you might be a blue comic, you might just work, but you should have something that, you know what, if you're going on Letterman, or if you're going on if you're going on any television network, if you're going on any radio network, I mean, do you want your set to be beeped all the way through? Or do you want them to listen to it and go, oh, I don't know if we can have anybody talking about that on air? You know, but if you had something that was clean, then you don't have to worry about being beeped or edited or something moved around. Everybody can hear every single word that you say. And every line that you have in there that you wanted to get out, you said it in a way that they can go ahead and go full that they didn't have to mess with it at all.
I thought it was interesting. I think I was listening to you talk to Todd Johnson about working clean, and he was just like, yeah, when you go down and you do those corporate shows or like some of those bigger gigs, he's like, just always go clean. He was really adamant about it because he's like, there'll be that one person in the audience that
going,
was offended.
Going clean, you go on clean, this is the thing. You're going clean to going blue. You can do a comedy show for a comedy club, and you can be there for those 4 days, right? And you can do these what, six gigs or five gigs in those 4 days, and then you can walk away as a headliner. You can walk away anywhere from $1,000 to $1,200, anywhere from $1,000 to $1,200 for those 3 days or 4 days that you're down there, right? Or you can do one corporate for 45 minutes and walk away with $1,500, $1,700, $2,000. up to I've the most I have ever been paid for just one gig was $2,500.
Nice. Where was that at?
That was at the Vineyard in Sonoma. I opened for Dana Carvey.
Whoa, cool. What was Dana Carvey like?
It's Dana. Actually, he's a very shy dude when you go up and try to talk to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not very like vocal. But when he's on stage, he's like a whole boom. He comes like out. But when you see him behind, he'll speak to you only if you speak to him first.
Interesting.
Yeah, he'll just kind of just hang out and be like, yeah, yeah.
You were talking about that earlier. Like, yeah, I'm like, because you're a mellow guy off stage. You're like, yeah, but when I'm on stage, I'm raising that flag. Like, you're bringing that energy.
Right. That's just the same thing with your job. Anybody goes to a job, you got to be something. You got to, when you go to that job, you got to do it the correct way. You got to do the job the correct way. It's the same thing. It's going on that stage. You go on the stage, you got a job to do. The stage isn't just for us going up there and venting and saying, hey, I'm a shitty person and I'm going to fucking tell you how shitty I am for the next 30 minutes. This is how shitty I am. And if you laugh, oh well. And if you don't, oh well. You know, like, right. Because then you're giving them, like, I mean, these cats paid money to come in and sit down and see you perform. Like, perform. Like, entertain them. Take them. Grab them. Do something. Show them that they got their money's worth. What do they pay their money for?
Right. And that helps you get rebooked, I'm sure.
Well, of course, because you see, like, a lot of people think that club owners and bookers, like the bookers that do, like, you know, like the different runs that go in between the things, okay, yeah, those cats, they really look at your material on a DVD, or they look at how somebody's, you know, they go, okay, yeah, I can use you, you can do 10 minutes, and they put you on the road. But, like, real club owners and real things like that, like, there's a few of them that even know what the fuck you do on stage. They don't really care what you do on stage. What they care is how many people are going to be sitting in their club when they bring you here. If I bring you to my club, how many folks are going to come in to see you because of what you do? Because down at the bottom, yeah, you can be the funniest dude, but if I got five people in my room, how am I supposed to pay you what you want to get?
Yeah.
You know, and that's where a lot of folks don't get it. They, you know, you don't, if you don't, just because you can fill 45 minutes, and just because you can do 45 minutes, okay, cool, who are you doing 45 minutes in front of? Like, who are you performing in front of? Who's coming to see you?
Great. Stuffed animals. They love me.
Which still isn't given. Even if your stuffed animals did come, it still isn't given the club owner the reason why you should pay you $1,000.
I don't know. Their allowance is pretty good.
Do you try to social network pretty hard when you're in a different town? Like, meet people, add them on Facebook, like, get their Twitter or whatever. So when you come back into town.
It depends on what town it is. That very much depends on the town. I went to a town called Fallon. It was nice. And there was nice people. The show was great. But there was a certain place that we went to, and it was kind of like, whoa, okay, we back in 1905.
Was it like the Fallon Museum?
Yeah. I wrote him a letter, but...
What was the deal with that? You were looking through the pictures, and then, do you not want to go here?
For me, as far as social networking, I guess it depends on how many friends the chick I'm banging has. Just kidding.
What's it like being a feature? What do you think the really important job of the feature is?
Oh, the feature has the easiest job, man. I mean, you don't have to stay the whole show. Most time the host is taking the bullet. And again, when the host does great, it's great. You just step on up, you ride that wave, you push it a little bit higher, and boom, then you're done. I mean, it's such a cherry gig. I mean, you know, of course, it depends on the crowd that you have, but I think for the most part, I mean, you're already walking into an already warm crowd. Even if they didn't get warm, even if the host has a, you know, rough time, you can go up and immediately separate yourself from them, and then boom, and next thing you know, they're like, oh, we're good, you know, this guy has immediate respect. Once again, you're walking into such a cherry gig that it doesn't take much. I mean, that's why a lot of times, man, I'll, you know, as much as I hate it, and until I decide to change it or go a different route, I'll start with some of my quickest, punchiest stuff right up front, after, you know, usually you give a shout out to the host or the guest spot, or just make some initial talk right up front, so they not only do they know that a performance is happening, but it's in the moment, you know, and it's, you know, whether it be bring up like a maybe local joke or whatever. But boom, as soon as that's done and you do the quick punchy stuff, you know, you're already so it's, you know, everything's downhill.
Then you're just coasting.
Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah. And then you just, you know, scope out the hot chicks in your free time while you're phoning in your set. No, I'm just kidding.
It's like the three women that listen to this podcast.
We're too far off from people phoning in and tweeting in their sets.
What's up, ladies?
You don't think we're too far off on that?
Just I think we're, with the way social networking goes nowadays and the way things happen, there's going to be one day that somebody's going to, like, VI Skype hologram themselves on stage pretty soon.
And you know what's going to be around at that time? This is my biggest fear as a comedian.
Pirates.
No, is when they come out with a laugh track app. And so the crowd can be on their phone and still pay attention, quote unquote, to the show. You know, blah, 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 punchline. And they just hit that button. And that's when it's going to be all. That's when people are going to start phoning in their sets.
That's when.
And then it's just going to be a sad technology.
I don't think we're going to be. We're not going to be too far from that. Is what I'm saying. Because the minute that it's going to be possible for anybody to do that, somebody's going to do it.
Dude,
and somebody's going to duplicate it, and then somebody's going to duplicate it, and then somebody's going to duplicate that, and somebody's going to take it to a different one. That's the way the shit goes, though. I mean, think about it.
And this is how fight clubs get started, okay? A copy of a copy.
Shakespearean days, right? When they're doing, like, you know, comedy or they're doing the jester stuff. Now, just imagine if, like, they were sitting down in the basement doing their little thing. One day, there'll be people sitting in front of their little video recording devices, and they'll be able to record it and blast it all over the world on another device. And guess what? We're living that shit right now, as they called it back then.
This surf has a great vocabulary.
It really does.
In the future, 400 years hither,
recording devices upon which they shall play things. We should enjoy them.
They'll be able to share it with the world in one click of a button.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we could find a Nostradamus theory that fits this. And,
yeah, it's
just share it on.
It's
got to
be in there somewhere.
It'll trend. It's got to be. And, but that's what I'm saying, is that from now, like, when you say that, people are just going to hit the laugh button and go, you know what? In the future, there's going to be people sitting at another podcast or something going, hey, my laugh button.
Yeah.
Don't you hate it when your laugh button gets stuck during your own set?
Oh, my God. Oh, I hate that.
I hate when I can't laugh at myself. Give me some more points.
The pointing system. Mikey,
what, dog?
What do you think is the most important thing for the MCU to do?
Of hipster comedy.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, that's cool. The most important thing for the MC, honestly, is just to do everything right, not to screw up. Because if you're going to get yelled at, it's going to be as an MC. Nobody yells at anybody else very often. Your job is basically to represent the club. Your job is to get all the announcements right. Your job is to introduce the audience to the comedians. Your job is to warm up the crowd. Your job is to sell drinks. I mean, your job is to do everything. Announce what's going on next. And all of it's important. Yeah. Like, I mean, just, it's all there. Like, I think telling jokes is like 17th on the list of important things that you do.
I feel like it's important to be likable.
My MC persona is a lot friendlier than, like, anything else that I do. It's just warm. Like, you gotta see, like, it's like welcoming people into your home. Like, thanks for coming to the club. I'm so glad you guys are here. And I am. And, you know, like, welcome. And you just talk a lot more. I talk a lot more as the MC.
Right. Like, fill out the comment cards.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's just part of your thing.
It's tough to get away with inviting somebody to your house, and the first thing you're like, yeah, come on in. Hey, check out this rape joke. You know, you're like, oh, yeah. Man.
Really, I mean, that is.
That was awkward.
Yeah, like,
I'm just kidding. There's our crawl space. And
it's actually something you do your whole career. Like, being an MC is just, you can always learn a new skill set. I've been MCing for 5 years, and every time I do it, I learn something new. I get access to new knowledge. Somebody teaches me something. Like, if you approach it with that attitude every time you go up first, there's so much to learn and so much to be good at as an MC that it's just a job that you could never, like, you could always be improving. Like, I've seen Sean MC, and Sean's been doing comedy twice as long as I have. And I'm sure that guy still has the same thing happen. When he goes up there every once in a while, he's like, oh, here's a new trick I got. Here's a new thing I could say. Stuff like that.
Figure out new ways to do crowd work and
it's a great experience. I think it's one of the most educational one, and it also is a really good job for teaching a perspective, because you are, like, you're the least important person on the show, but you have a lot of responsibilities. So it's kind of fun when you're getting in there, you get your hands dirty, and you're doing some work, but you get no accolades, which is probably something you should get used to if you want to do comedy.
Get used to that.
That's the thing, man. I mean, you're just starting out, and like, you do. You if you have a very, like, rough act, or it can be standoffish. What it does, but what hosting does is force you to interact with the crowd in a positive manner. And as soon, and for people who have that, that's a tough time, whether it be their personality or whether it be their material, that forcing, it automatically starts that ability for them to connect to the crowd that way, and that just grows the more you host, and the more you do comedy, and the easier it'll get, and the better it is for your actual overall act. So,
oh, that's very cool. True. You guys, did you have any hecklers this weekend? Do you have any?
You know what? I rarely have hecklers, and I don't know. It's weird, you know. Knock on wood.
Right.
I'm sure I'll come across it, but a lot of times, usually it's people that want to like they get too revved up. And I don't know if it's my just the material or if it's my personality or if it's their overall something, but I hardly ever have hecklers. They usually just want to be, the one I face the most are the people that are talking during the show, and I don't really consider that, personal heckling. I mean, it's fucking
like they're not attacking you.
Yeah. If they're just talking, I can ignore it. I mean, if I have to acknowledge it, if it's disrupting the show, but yeah, I really. Not too many hecklers, which I'm kind of lucky.
We had a bachelorette party. Those are fun.
They were in the back, though, and I felt like they were pretty good as far as...
For a young woman bachelorette party? Hell yeah, they're very...
But that's weird that we have to, put it in that way, because they have a pretty bad reputation.
Oh, yeah, they're like the nuclear bomb of comedy clubs. Like,
yeah.
Especially you put them up front.
That's why I said young woman. You get an older woman over 30 getting married, having a bachelorette party, it is more subdued. These ladies have a much more relaxed thing.
Did you just say women over 30 or older?
Yeah.
Are both of your lady listeners over 30?
Probably over.
I'm speaking in general, not even just to the people here, but yeah, because the young ladies always like, we're going to go out and we're going to have a good time. It's going to be crazy. It's all about you tonight. And then you get to a place where the lights are shut off and the spotlight's on somebody else and everybody else in the room is paying attention to that person. And at some point, that young chick's going to be like, why isn't no one paying attention to me? This is my bachelorette party. And that's why they make the noise.
They're super loud. They're like pulling each other's hair out in the bathroom because they got too drunk. Like,
that joke's not funny. I don't like that joke. Well, then just wait till the next one, you cunt.
Yeah, we're on
the radio. It's the internet. Jeremy doesn't like that
besides,
word.
Besides, if you only have two listeners, I mean, two ladies,
Right, yeah.
Are they 30 and over?
Yeah, because you got one now.
Yeah, if you're 30 and over, you're in the clear.
And my number is dropping.
Every time Chad's on, you lose half your phone.
It's like the refresh button. You're welcome.
Thanks. That's good. We'll just start all over again. I'll just rename it. No one will know. Shauna, I don't feel like...
Seriously?
No, you're fine, dude.
Yeah. I wasn't informed.
At this point, we're like, shut your fucking mouth.
Shauna, it seems like you have a lot of very relatable material. It doesn't seem like you get heckled much. Like, I've seen you here at the club.
Oh, I get heckled a lot.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What are some things that you say to hecklers? Are you nice about it, or do you kind of hit them hard? Does it depend on the situation?
Levels. I have different levels. First, if I do, I'm going to say something that's going to embarrass them to make them actually really shut up. To where, okay, but if they still keep going, I don't mess with them anymore. I mess with everybody at their table.
So then they feel embarrassed and they tell that person
pretty
to shut
much
up?
I'll just turn your party on you.
Awesome.
That way you're sitting there and they're sitting there looking at you like, dude, shut up. If he talks about my ear one more time, I'm punching you in the face. Because he's only here because of your loud mouth. They found out about the hole in my sock because of your dumb ass.
Do you ever have people come up to you after the show and be like, that was offensive? Or have you run into people that didn't like the material? So I'm gonna go over to Chad then.
Chad, but no, I haven't. I've never had someone come up. Usually, I'll get the people that'll relate and come up and they're like, "Hey, I got a joke for you," and you're like, "Please don't,
please, no good.
You, please don't crush my soul. Please don't make me put on the fake smile.
It's how you take it. Like I've seen Chad in Boise, I've seen Chad in Reno, I've seen Chad in Sac. And I've seen him interact with the audience, and it's a professionalism that you're saying. Like, you don't know these people, but you're still trying to treat them and have a good time at the same time. That we don't have to worry about. Like, I don't have to worry about Chad saying something that's going to get somebody to try to fight him outside the club when he's done.
Because Chad's a pussy.
Totes for real.
But it's like, but like, you know, that, and that's one of the things. That's one of the things that I talk about. Like when I talk about going clean. is that like some people, I actually have a comedian in Northern California who he says he's like, well, I'm an insult comp. That's what I do is I insult people. And I'm like, well, and he's like, Sean, how come you haven't got me booked yet? And I'm like, well, most of these places don't want people insulting their money. You know what I'm saying? It's not going to work. But then most of the cats do is like, some people are like, I'm going to say this and I don't care how you take it, but I'm just going to say it. Now, that is a loaded line. That's a loaded line. Like that line, I don't care how you take it. I'm just going to say it anyway. When I say it, you can take it how you want to say it. Now, doing that as a comedian is that you're in front of a bunch of strangers that you have no idea where you're going to see them next. Mm-hmm. You have no idea. You could be getting like that. That's when I was having my surgery. I was asked that question if I was a comedian. I was just about to go under on the needle, and the anesthesiologist was like, "Aren't you that comedian?" And I was like, "Holy shit!" I was going through my head of, okay, I hope I didn't say nothing to piss this dude off. Like, because this is not the time to be asking me this question when I'm about to go to sleep. But it's the same thing. It's like some folks don't know. You never know. You might say something to somebody and insult them, think it's a funny play off of that laugh. Dude gets mad, and then next time you know, you see him, but he's making your pizza, or he's making your food, or he's at some other spot, or they work for the DMV, and now you're the only one in Idaho that's waiting. Like, because when I went to the DMV, I was in and out that bitch in like 6 minutes.
That like, never happens.
That never happens. Not in California. You actually have to call in to get your number.
Oh, shit. Wow. Yeah, you'll be up in 2 days.
It's ridiculous, dog. It's ridiculous. When I came here, it was crazy. I pulled my tag number, and the minute I pulled it, it was telling me, it was like, I pulled it, like, ooh, 42, and it was like, now serving 42. I was like, what?
That's when you're like, bingo!
Yahtzee.
Damn, dude, that's quick. Know, but you the never one know second who bingo.
You never know who you might be, who you're talking to in that audience. You never know who you're talking to. And you never know when you're going to see that person again, anytime. You never know who it might be.
You know, for those cats who I'm an insult comic, and how come I can't be booked? Those people, I always tell them, like, look, you know who you look at? Jeffrey Ross. Jeffrey Ross knows how to do the insult in such a friendly and fun way that you know that him saying harsh stuff about the chick on stage's shirt, like, it's just a joke, it's just a hammer job, and, you know, if you ever do watch his, Jeff Ross Roast America, it's fantastic, man. The whole thing is him, he literally invites people to come up on stage and volunteer to get roasted, and he'll just do an immediate roast, but it's done in such a fantastic way. He's like, yeah, he's an insult comic, but that's the thing, like, comic. You know, people see that more than the insult.
It's kind of how you.
It definitely helps the way he looks and the his mannerism stuff. You know, there's some stuff that takes away from the hit. But
way to defend the insult comics, Chad.
Well, I'm saying no. I said that's my advice to those people. I'm like, look, if you want to get booked, you got to find your way to do what Jeff Ross did.
Yeah, but like Jeff Ross tells people when he's roasting them too, like he doesn't just go up. Like, you know what you're getting into if you go to a Jeff Ross roast show.
Yeah, but even if you went to a Jeff Ross roast show and had no clue about it, and you were kind of taken aback at the insults, you would soon, if you gave it 5-10 minutes, you would get into the vibe of the people in the crowd that knew it was a joke. You're like, oh, okay, this is, you know, you're not serious with this, you know, hammering stuff, you know, and they get it, they understand it.
Hopefully.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, I'm sure Jeff Ross had people walking out on him, like, early
he's
in his
probably,
career before.
And he's probably had a couple of encounters in the parking lot going out to his car.
Fun fact.
I mean, I remember a comedian.
Let's get him on the phone.
I remember a comedian named Baba.
Devin, make it happen.
A comedian named Baba that happened out in, it happened out in Fairfield, California, at Pepper Bells. He's an insult comic, and he went through it.
Was he a clown? What was his name?
His name was Baba.
Yeah,
but he's the Fox. He's worked the Foxhole with John Fox out in Santa Cruz. He's worked the Improv. He's worked.
It's a wild name, man.
He's worked a lot of places. He's been from Northern California all the way up the whole West Coast, from Washington all the way down from L.A. But Baba was like, he did a show at Pepper Bellies, and one person didn't like it. And the next thing you know, we're calling an ambulance because this dude gets beat down in the parking lot. And I mean, he got beat down. Yes,
really.
Beat down.
What was the guy's name who beat him up?
I don't remember the guy's name who beat him up, but I just know we picked him up.
What would it be crazy? It was like his name was Bilbo. Bilbo. It was like something crazy. All right, I'm sorry.
Save it for the stage, Dick.
Yeah, I was looking at you.
Mike, you've done a lot of roasts. I feel like you're probably one of the best roasters in town.
Thanks, man.
I ran into the buddy that you roasted last time. What was his name?
Josh Kiefer?
Yeah, Josh Kiefer. Yeah, we went to a wine tasting.
Yeah, Josh was cool. Yeah. He was really cool about it. It was a surprise roast.
He didn't know?
Well, somebody told him. I'm not going to out that, but like, yeah, his lady, B. Williams, kind of set it up as a surprise. And he doesn't like surprises. Somebody kind of let him out.
She did a surprise roast.
Like, surprise, you suck! I mean, roasts have a format. Like, you know, when you go to a roast, you kind of are worn. And even with roasts, you know, even though everyone's drinking and having a good time, you still have people who will hesitate when you go to certain, you say certain things, you do certain things. And it is, like, a good roast comic, a really good roast comic can say that stuff. And everyone knows they're joking, because, like, this is the time when we're messing around. Like, there's still stuff you don't say, there's still stuff you don't do.
Well, yeah, and plus comics, when it's comics roasting other comics, that line is so much further than the line that you use for people, you know? Because you don't want to say that one thing that, like, that's the one thing that pisses them off, and then you're out in the parking lot getting your ass kicked, and comics are calling the ambulance for you. So it happens.
I did a roast recently where we got people super drunk. They just over drunk. And by the end of it, there was a lot of yelling at people on stage because they lost control of it. But that was non-comedians were doing that. It was a lot of fun, but I don't do that. Like, my stand-up act, I don't go after anybody. I don't insult anyone. I mean, you know, famous people, maybe.
Right.
Yeah, but screw those people.
Yeah, who cares about famous people?
They don't give a shit about me at all. They will never meet me. They will never know who I am.
Sean, how long have you been doing comedy?
I'm coming up on number 13.
Lucky number 13. So you say your home clubs, like Laughs and Sack?
Laughs Unlimited Sacramento, Pepper Bellies in Fairfield, Cops Comedy Club in San Francisco, Pioneer Underground in Reno, Las Vegas Hilton in Vegas.
You're pretty tight with the Reno scene.
Oh yeah. That's like my second home.
That's actually where I was thinking about moving to before I moved to Idaho.
What convinced you to bless us with your presence in Fair Boise?
Because it's nice here.
It is nice.
You guys actually have, like, real snow, and it's not, like, nasty snow, and you guys have a lot less meth heads that walk around my neighborhood than probably I would have had in Reno.
Fun fact.
That's fun fact. Well, congratulations, your son just graduated.
Yes. We didn't know he was walking the line until like 15 hours before he did it.
Wow.
Yeah.
He pulled it
kind of tight there.
Yeah, like father like son, huh?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
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 Sean, what got you into comedy 13 years ago? What made you decide that comedy's the way you wanted to go?
Well, 13 years ago would be like my coming back, because I started in 98 when I was in the military. I used to teach the weapons classes, and every time I would teach a class, I would always tell jokes in the middle of the class because I want my folks happy since they're holding rifles that are loaded. I don't want them walking around pissed off and shit because they got shit on their heads and now they got a loaded weapon. So I used to always do stuff like that, and my first gig that I ever did was in Oceanside at the Firehouse. It was 1997. 1997 was my first gig, and then 98, I got out of active duty. I went in the reserve and started working again and stayed off the comedy scene until like 2001. And I opened at this where we were commuting back from from work, and my buddy was like, dude, man, you always be cracking us up. You know, there's an open mic at Pepper Bellies every Wednesday night. And that was 13 years ago.
Awesome.
Well, 12 and some change.
12 and some change. But, yeah, every time the heater kicks on in this room, everybody thinks the ceiling's going to come down.
It's totally
hot,
yeah.
If it's a heater, why does it feel cold?
That's a very good question.
Well,
you know,
it's the basement.
We're in the basement.
It's pushing the heat upstairs. Like,
people should be here. We're just sitting by the engine.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we are in the basement.
There you go.
I guess I could have hit the thermostat.
Nah, it's dizzy.
No. Sean, I want to ask you...
I'm just going to light a fire.
Yeah.
About... I know, I feel like there comes a point in a comics career, because you travel a lot. This is what you do full time. Like, is this like a weird moment in a comics career when they're like, all right, I'm going for it? Like kind of like a leap of faith kind of feeling?
The day they want to quit.
Is it?
True. Somebody asked me that before. They said, When was the day you knew you was a comedian? I was like, the day I wanted to quit this shit. The day I actually looked myself in the mirror and I was going, what the hell am I doing? And I'm like, I got a family, I got kids, I got a wife, I got to take care of stuff. And what am I doing? And then at that point, it was like, this is what I'm doing. I couldn't live without it. I couldn't think straight. I took myself out for like maybe 2 weeks. And I just went back to work and I just did my job and I kept my head down and I kept going. But it kept eating at me. It was like, no, dude, you can do this shit. And then it just flipped from that point. It was like, all right, it was like the next gear. But it was the day that I said that I want to quit, that I want to walk away from this shit.
That's interesting. Huh. I've actually heard that from other comedians. They say that, yeah, you're not, you like don't know that you're going to be a professional comedian until the day that you know you want to quit it.
Yep.
We were talking about what you just did. You were all over the place. You flew to Georgia. Mac, like, people was like, oh, you get on stage and tell jokes. It'll just be so much fun and easy. Like, it's not easy. It's taxing, right?
It's so hard on you physically. I mean, it depends on how hard. Like, for me, doing all that traveling and flying, I mean, my whole body was off. Like, you know, like, my body knows what time I'm supposed to shit and what time I'm supposed to do, you know, certain things like that. But it's like, in between, it's like, why am I going to the bathroom at 2 o'clock in the morning? Because I was forcing myself to go to the bathroom at 1 o'clock in the morning over at this time or whatever. But it's like, it throws your clock off. You have no idea, like time doesn't exist at all. Like, I don't know if this makes sense, but when you're on the road and you're going from, like, gig to gig to gig, like, time doesn't exist anymore. Like, before you know it, it's gig time. And it could have been 10 hours that you thought you had before the gig, and for some reason, boom, it's time to be at the gig already. And it just flies because you're, like, you're moving, you're driving, you're showing up, you're checking in, you're putting down,
you're stoned.
Putting stuff down. You're going around, even when you're not, like coming from Georgia back to Oakland and all that stuff, like I didn't smoke that whole time going there. I didn't smoke till I came back to Cali. Like I didn't have none of that stuff. So that stuff was like, but it was like, as soon as I was getting there, I was checking in, I was dropping my gear. I had to go over to the room. I had to make sure that this was set up and go back to my room and then get the stuff together and then head over there and then do the show. And then the show's over. And then it's like, everybody wants to stay up and talk till like 2 o'clock in the morning. And then you go back to the room, you try to get some sleep. You end up waking up early. And then that whole day flies by like shit. Next thing you know, it's gig time again. And then right when that gig's done and you're done with that, then you put your shit back in and then boom, you're off to the next one again.
Just, yeah, it's crazy. It just seems like it just it's not
like
stopping.
Some folks think like, yeah, sometimes my gigs, my weeks will go by fast. If I'm constantly gigging from day to day to day to day, if I'm going, okay, I'm doing this one on Thursday, this one on Friday, this one on Saturday. Like, if that's what's happening, that week will fly by. Like, I didn't even know. I'm like, holy shit, we're on Friday already. Could have swore we were just on Monday.
Yeah.
It takes a toll on you a lot, though.
I feel like, yeah, it's kind of emotionally taxing as well. Like, you're putting a lot of energy out there at every show, you know, because like we were talking about earlier, you want to give the audience a good show, and you want to dump all that energy in there. It kind of takes it out of you, I feel like.
It takes a lot. And especially if you got to do, like, 2 shows in a night. Like, I don't mind it, but at 2 shows a night, when you got to do 2 45-minute sets, 45 minutes to an hour or whatever, or you do that 1 45-minute set in the first show, and then the second show, they're like, oh, it's the second show, so you just go as long as you want to. And you got that one person standing in the back of the room who usually gives you the light, and they're staring at you, and they're doing this. And you're already at fucking 47 minutes, 48 minutes, and you just go, oh, really? And it's like this. You're like, all right. And then you actually go to like an hour 15, and you're just like, okay, I didn't even know we went that far. But then you got that whole hour 15 plus the 45 minutes, and you did this all within 4 hours.
Wow, that's crazy.
And then you go back to the room, and you fall asleep, and you wake up at like noontime, and you go, damn it, I missed my continental breakfast that I could have got for free if I would have just got up and went down to the lobby real quick.
Muffins and stuff.
Yeah,
cereal.
Yeah,
that's
I
cool
just
shit
missed all
right
that,
there.
So now I'm waking up, and I got to go find lunch, because they don't do a continental lunch. So now I got to go down to McDonald's or someplace and grab something real quick, come back, take a shower. Before I know it, it's showtime again. It's time to get down to the club, get set up, set the things going. And then you're just going, okay, then you got to sit there and wait. Everybody goes, then you go up, and then you do it all over again. But sometimes days and time, like, this shit, just before you know it.
What's some of the worst hotels you guys have been booked in?
Winter's casinos are right, as long as you don't get, like, the smoking room smell like butthole.
Dude, mine was so right funny. By the staircase.
Of course.
My window was right where everybody was running up all night, dropping their keys. Dropping their stuff that's not just hitting the staircase, but it's fallen off the staircase and hitting my window. So anything that falls off the staircase is hitting the window to my hotel room. And then my bathroom, it's not like a toilet. It's like a prison toilet. It's like made out of steel, and it's got that big thing that when you flush it, like, it sucks shit down, and you can even feel yourself kind of going with it because it's which is like, yeah, you're like living in a closet. But the worst, I did a show for Brian Bonner Entertainment, and it was me and Kermit Apio.
I love Kermit.
Kermit's awesome.
It was me and Kermit, and we did we did this gig for Brad, and they had us at this ranch that was, this was the directions. The directions was go up Interstate 5 till you get to Red Bluff. When you get to Red Bluff, take it off on the first exit of Red Bluff, and then go east. Then they said, this is what it was. When you go east, they said, when your cell phone service runs out of service, the minute it goes boom, you're exactly 1.6 miles away.
That's terrifying.
Yes. So there's no cell phone service. We get out there. Now, mind you, this is a Brad Bonner gig. So Brad Bonner, he's a really good dude. And when he books gigs, like, you get paid real money. You know, we're not driving all the way out here for $150 and a chance to sell all our stuff. Like, Brad pays good money for us to come. So I don't care where he has it at. So we get out there and we pass these. We come through the gate and then we see the ranch and we come through the gate and there's like all these tough sheds, all up on the side of the front entrance when we're driving in. And like, I make a joke, right? I make a joke to my buddy that's riding with me. And I'm like, dude, look, that's where all the help sleeps, right? And I make a joke. We get up to the top of the hill, and at the top of the hill, there's this nice hotel, and that's where, and then the showroom, and the hotel's right there. So we pull in, we check in with Brad, and then Brad's like, okay, yeah, this is the room, this is that. And he's like, yeah, hey, can we go hit the hotel rooms so we can get changed? And he was like, you guys remember coming in the gate when you guys came to the ranch? And he's like, yeah. He's like, you remember those things that all had numbers? I'm like, the tough sheds? He goes, yeah, you're in 22, and I think Kermit's in 21. And we pulled in, dude, I swear to God. Kermit is standing right next to me, and he's looking. Kermit's doing one of these things. He just stands there with his arms folded, and he's just looking. And he's like this, and he goes,
like, what?
He goes, hey, Sean, is yours locked from the outside, too? And I'm like, yeah, padlock. Like, there's a padlock. Like, you can literally lock us in these rooms. But the rooms come with two beds and a bathroom. And that's just a toilet and a sink. No shower.
Oh, God. That sounds absolutely terrible.
A Bible and a noose.
It looks like a tough shit. But it was, yeah, that was the worst hotel room. But you know what? Even though it was the worst, I was with good people. So it was actually the funnest. Because it was like we were camping. It was like, because then we went to the teepee that night.
Camping in a really dirty bedroom. Naughty stuff happened.
We went to the teepee that night. They invited us to the teepee. Like, the whole club. Now, there was, I don't know, maybe 140 people that were in this room. And, like, when they came to the show that night, I was like, how the hell did, like, I don't even have phone signal up here. How did you guys even know the show was happening? Like, are there foxes running around with little messages tied to their back to let each clan know that we're here? But it was
people under the stairs got to come out sometime.
They told us, they said, come to the teepee tonight. And we was like, what's the teepee? Is that the name of a bar or someplace? And I'm like, no, it's the teepee. So it was me, Kermit, Brad, and my friend Jesse. They're like, this is what you do. You drive
12
down
rolls of toilet
one
paper.
1 mile, you drive down the road 1.3 miles, make a left turn onto the dirt road. Follow that dirt road for 2.6 miles until you reach the oak tree. So when we, and I'm like, I see oak trees everywhere we're driving, right? And we pulled in, and I was like, we're at 2 point something miles, this is where we're supposed to be at. It's like, if you see an oak tree, and my boy got out the car, and he was like, I bet you they're talking about this oak tree. And there was this huge fucking tree, right? They're like, there was no way that you could say, okay, that's not the oak tree they're talking about.
Was it the one from the ticket stub commercials? Was it that?
It was like the one from Sleepy Hollow when they were trying to look for where the dude was buried. It was a moment like that where you're just going, okay, this has got to be the tree. And then right there, dude, there's a teepee 30 feet high. That the diameter on this thing, dude, it had granite countertops inside. It had, like, rabbit fur. It had the fire going. This teepee was huge. It was about the size of this room.
Damn, that's cool.
It was huge as shit. We're all just sitting in like this. We're sitting rolling up on a rabbit fur. Kermit's sitting next to me. He's just like, this is nice. And I'm looking at Kermit. I'm just like, yeah, dude, you know what? I don't want to go back to the tough shit. Let's see if we can just date it. We're only like 3 miles from the tough shit right now.
guys got any shows coming up? Anything you want to plug? You're going to do True Grinders on Tuesday?
Yeah, June 11th. June 11th, you can check out the True Grinders for the Real Talk Comedy Showcase, which actually Mikey Pullman and Chad Heff are involved with. They'll be on that show, too, on June 11th.
It's the two Tuesdays from now.
Yeah, two Tuesdays.
11/2013.
If you want any other details on that, you can find us on Facebook under Sean Real. It's for the Real Talk Comedy Facebook. And you can find us at Twitter at Real Talk Comedy.
You guys want to drop your Twitters?
Go ahead, Chad.
At Chad F.
Yeah, I am on Facebook, MySpace, Instagram, Twitter.
I got LinkedIn, you on MySpace.
LinkedIn and Mikey Pullman. Mikey Pullman. They use my real name so people can find me, Sean.
I have like five Sean Peabody's.
Yeah, there are a lot of Sean Peabody's.
On Facebook. I have like, there's like five of them. I was trying to get it to be Real Talk, but they was like, you have to use a real name. And I was like, well, how about just, I had one that said Max Real, and that one came out first, and then that one got hacked.
I'd like to make a correction. I am not using LinkedIn. That's some bullshit.
I'm not doing it.
I don't care about your skills.
It's Pinterest. I got a really good casserole recipe the other day.
I like to bake, so maybe I should get Pinterest.
Probably should. And guys, if you listen to this on Podomatic, you can check it out on my Facebook page. It's called The Green Room Interviews. And you can catch me on Twitter, ONEDEVO, the one Devo. Thanks for listening, guys. Have a good wherever the hell, what time you're listening to this.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks, buddy.